Hello, welcome back to Relevant Tones. I am your host this week, Matthew Dosland, and today I am ecstatic to be joined by the artistic director, founder, and violist of Ethel, Ralph Ferris. Ralph, welcome. How are you today?
I am great, Matthew. Thank you. Such a delight to be here. I want to just correct the record. I'm co-artistic director with my co-founder, Dorothy Lawson. She is a cellist, and we share the hot seat, the two of us having been around since the beginning. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Please, thank you. Yes, the other members we might as well mention as well, Kip Jones and Corin Lee on violin, not co-artistic directors, but wonderful, very valuable members of the quartet themselves.
And actually, I would say Dorothy and I have the fancy titles, but we are truly a democratic organization. I mean, it's really basically four equal votes. And Kip and Corey head up different departments and different projects all the time. And as far as the inner workings of the band and all, we defer to them on so many things, just as they defer to us on others. So it's a sort of just a nod to our history, Dorothy and me, with this fancy title.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think talking about that collaborative spirit of Ethel, which is a string quartet for those of our listeners who might not know, it is a string quartet founded in 1998, kind of the stated mission of bringing contemporary works to the forefront, bringing different styles into this fold we call classical music, kind of avoiding classical music as well when it is more fun to avoid the term. And I want to talk a little bit about that collaborative spirit that you all bring. You work with so many different people. You have such a wide breadth of styles that you all draw on. What's it like just ch choosing a project? How do you get a project started? And we'll get into your kind of most recent project here in a moment, but how do you get that ball rolling when there's so many places you could start and so many different kind of voices and opinions to bring together?
It's such a great question, and it's getting me thinking on all sorts of things because there's so many different ways things get started. But I think the critical thing, I'm just going to cite an example, a really kind of silly and embarrassing example. Ethel was at the TED conference maybe 12, 13, 14 years ago, something like that. And there was this, I'm going to spare you the company information, but there was a corporation that a company that we were meeting with there that seemed very interested in a collaboration. Turns out they were really tight friends with Oprah, and our collaborative work at that point was all about, well, as I will go into more, connecting with folks, sharing their work, sharing our work with them, sh having them share their work with us, building new works together from a space of mutual respect and understanding and caring for histories and then celebrating the new togetherness. We found this company that was really, really inspiring, and we got really excited. It seemed like there was a collaboration that I was actually going to be a step into the commercial market with an actual product that could be Ethel branded. And we got all excited that this was maybe going to be one of Oprah's favorite things. And I wrote maybe two emails and had wonderful exchanges, things getting very exciting. Again, this company was quite close with Oprah. They were friends with her. And then this communication just stopped at a certain point, just no longer. And I kept writing emails, 2 weeks later, a month later, 3 months later. And then I connected with another, they call them Tedsters, who was a board member at the time, and she was a mutual friend of these folks. And she's a very savvy business person. And she said, "You know what? If they're not answering you, it means it's not happening. They've moved on. They're not actually being rude. They've moved on. It's just, this is not part of their vision for now." And this was like a ding going off in my head. It's like, wait a second. So you mean if they're not talking to me, I should stop bothering them? Sort of question. Then I become the guy from that string ensemble that's annoying you for this project that nobody wants to hear about anymore. And so, yeah, it's a relatively embarrassing way to start up a conversation with you, but I cite it to share the tremendous lesson that I learned, which is that you cannot push on something if you don't have minimum 100% buy-in from the other side. Now, for a moment with this possible corporate collaboration, we did have buy-in. We got all excited, but clearly they went and brought it back to their team, and somebody said, that doesn't really seem like a fit, and they realized they had to move on. Sure, I would have loved a thank you very much, this isn't going to work email, but that's just not necessarily how things go. That was another lesson. But to realize then and there, because I had spent, easily 60, 70% of my collaborative energy just getting people, trying to get people excited to come and do something with us. And I realized I could, it's the work smarter, not harder thing. I was working so hard for things that weren't actually panning out. And I could it seems so simple to look at it right now, but I actually had to learn the lesson to see I shouldn't be expending the energy unless I really have somebody doing the same thing on the other side. So that's really the key for us right now. Any number of us, all four of us have gazillions of ideas all the time. We do. We have brainstorm sessions. We have ideation sessions. We share new projects that we're excited about, either in our personal lives or somebody's gone to an exhibition or something, or they saw a show, or they heard this new composer, or they saw this choreographic work that they loved, and they said, hey, we might consider something like this. If we get excited, the four of us, that's the first barrier that has to be crossed. Because if I'm gung-ho about some project that's all about the export import and export of ex import and export of produce from Georgia, I don't know. And two of us are really into it and two of us aren't, then I don't really have the buy-in from the group, so I'm not even going to spend the energy or time worrying too much about, well, let's go talk to an exporter. I need to get the buy-in from the group first. I'm not going to force anything if the four of us are not all on board. Alongside that, we have a team. We have a development director. We have a business manager. We have a board that backs us in our work. So we sometimes with our projects, as we do move them forward, we do require board approval to move to step into the next phases. But with the idea of a project that is going to involve a collaborator, so that first step, get the band on board. Second step, if the band's on board, then typically, as I had said earlier, Corey and Kip and Dorothy and I, we all have our own little fiefdoms within the organization. So say Corey comes with a project that he's really keen to see move forward. He's brought it to the four of us. We're very excited. Perhaps we've elicited board support. Now Corey's going to pick up the ball and he's going to run with it. He's going to reach out to a collaborator. He's going to see if that collaborator is in fact extending the energy back to him. If they are not, Corey's going to regroup. He's going to say, okay, maybe that wasn't the collaborator. Maybe there's a different collaborator. Check two or three people, report back to us. If that is a success, well, if it's no energy, no response, then obviously we're not going to move forward. But if it is a success, then the next steps basically move to the get to know you, show you mine, show me yours sort of stage, which is basically, hi, we love your work. We are very inspired by this idea of doing something with you. This particular topic really resonates with us. How does this land for you? And so that step we take after the initial, yes, we are both reaching across these bodies of reaching across worlds, reaching from world to world. Once that happens, then we're in the sharing space, then it becomes whole bunches of Zoom meetings. It may be that, say, this is a Corey project. Corey is going to be carrying down the walking down the path with this collaborator, then sharing stuff with us when it's appropriate. He may have a writing assignment for me. He may have discussion into some technological something or other that needs to be figured out with Kip. Or maybe he wants to talk to somebody on the board about, because there's we're dealing with something that has to do with an expertise of theirs. So that's how that stuff, just the nitty-gritty of it, works. But the actual sharing of the work, the being together in the collaboration, becomes intensely personal. And the way that we do that, the way that we bring that into our lives, as an ensemble, is we do our best, and this is an ongoing effort, to step into beginner's mind, that we know nothing in this new ensemble. Yes, we're the four of us. We have this history. Dorothy, 25 years, Kip, 12, 13 years, Kip, Corey, 8+ years, I think. We know each other very well, but you bring another collaborator to the room, two collaborators, it's a new thing entirely. Now, the four of us are going to have our thrown way of beings, our ways that we behave with each other, our ways that we know we can count on, but all of us are doing our best to put that aside to be in a new space with this person. So the person, on top of everything else, doesn't suddenly feel like there's a wall of, this unit of four that you have to work around. That's an awful thing for a collaborator to come in to feel like, one against four. And the four would in fact feel like greater than the sum of its parts, obviously. So we do our best to come in, interestingly enough, sort of as individuals a little bit. So we break it all down and start anew every single time. And then when it comes up to performance space, that allows us to welcome the fifth or the sixth and the seventh or however many there are into the body that we've built. While allowing us to retain that curiosity, that generosity, that listening, as a project comes through its developmental stages. And it's a really lovely way to build our work. I think it's different from a lot of other groups because so many times we're building from the ground up. We're actually building new work together. Brand new work, or we're collaborating on something that's your project, or you're collaborating on our project, but it's not like we're sitting down and playing a Brahms clarinet quintet. Everybody knows what that project's gotta sound like at the end. We can fight about the triplets and the triplets against the duplets and have all those discussions. That's its own thing, and there's a tried and true history of how you get through that. And in those instances, a lot of times, that clarinetist might really feel four against one. They may really well feel that. We do try to break that down. With Robert Mirabal, our longtime collaborator from Taos Pueblo, we have built a quintet with him. We are not Ethel plus Robert. We are a quintet with him. And I think that comes from our willingness to be vulnerable, willingness to step in it. Oh boy, I step in it all the time. Understanding that we don't have all the answers, we don't know how this goes. And the second you become an expert on something is the second that I start to worry if we really should be listening to you. A self-declared expert. Oh boy. Yeah, great. That's lovely. You can be in charge of that if you like, but I'm gonna go over here and see what this person who's taking risks and isn't sure about everything is up to. I don't know how well I answered that question. I sort of, but I felt like I was getting into the process a little bit. The very long story short of it is somebody's going to find something they love. They bring it to us, we get agreement together, and then we see if that energy is reciprocated across the table. If it's not, it's got to stop. It has to stop because we'll be banging our heads against the wall. And we've had projects like that just, we desperately wanted to see it happen, and it just wasn't going to happen. It's sad, but that's how life is.
Yeah, I think, well, you answered the question
Oh,
very
good.
thoroughly, which I appreciate. And you did answer it, absolutely.
Good.
Your most recent project that's going to be coming out shortly, I believe the release date is now December 6th, Persist, the album Persist with Allison Loggins Hull as main collaborator. What has that looked like, and what's been the ongoing relationship with Alison Loggins Hull, as well as the music on that album? You know, where has it kind of come from? Where has it led you?
It's an interesting thing, this particular collaboration, because we've known Allison for a good long while. This might be over a decade as well. This is our first time collaborating with her musically. She actually worked with our organization before. But we've been in awe of her as she's just been skyrocketing. She's doing all these extraordinary things. From Cleveland to New Jersey Symphony to all
Yes.
these awards and touring everywhere, and she's just doing such fantastic work. Getting to know her as we already knew her as a performer, fantastic performer. We were huge Flutronics fans. We aren't they fantastic? Oh my
Oh,
goodness!
they're so great.
Yes,
Everybody,
so good.
Flutronics, Natalie Joachim, Alison Loggins Hull. Please, I say
Oh
it all the
my goodness!
time. Go
Just
listen to them.
go listen to them, watch them. They are phenomenal, and we had booked them all the time over at the Metropolitan Museum. Not all the time. We booked them. Actually, did we ever get to book Flutronics? We booked Allison. I don't know that we ever booked Flutronics, but we always wanted to book Flutronics. But we got to work with Natalie when she was with Blackbird for a second. So just got to work with them in various ways. But Allison, just to see this compositional voice of hers, which I hadn't really known except in the Flutronics work, to commission her for a quintet was just so satisfying. To see a longtime friend, just who's known you and put up with your nonsense for a decade, and knows you're playing so well, to actually say, hey, it's time, let's do this thing. And add to that, we had a really fun conversation. Sometimes Ethel will do remixes, sometimes, or covers, you might say. So cover remix is sort of a gray area. Those are two sort of rock or pop terms. Cover being basically, if you've got a Bob Dylan song, you're going to cover it with your band. A remix being more, that might be more like a DJ sort of situation, or a dance remix or something. You take that Bob Dylan song and you rearrange it, reorchestrate it, put it in 7/8, whatever you do. To step into this space with Allison, I'm not sure where I got to remix, but if you can recall. All right. Anyway, you can edit that part.
Fix it in post.
To step into this space with Allison as a composer, to see her treating these voices that she's known for so long, with her very personal story. I mean, her piece actually speaks to her ancestry, and her family history. And it's an amazing honor to feel that, to see that she had the comfort level with us to step into that space with her. And it was actually really awesome. Was it yesterday? I think, yes, no, 2 days ago. We were rehearsing with her 2 days ago, and there was this big moment in Persist, her piece, that is just so intense. 16th notes, and then 5/5/5/5/5, triple it, and it's just perpetual motion for all the Ethels. And at the end of it, she said, wow, that really feels like Ethel. And it was really just so exciting to hear her say that, because one of the big things when we're working with a composer is for them to understand that they're not necessarily writing for a string quartet, they're writing for Ethel. And that is not always front and center for a lot of composers when they think, okay, string quartet commission or quintet commission, I'm going to write a string quartet, first violin, second violin, viola, cello. But that just doesn't fit with Ethel. We are four equal voices, witness our organizational model. And we really are four soloists in our own rights as well. And writing for us, writing to our strengths is such a key to being able to actually pull the most out of us. In Persist, Allison's got me on a pizzicato loop that Dorothy joins in canon, comes back through the piece, and to just be in canon with Dorothy in pizzicato just feels so grounding and feels just right. And then the groove in the middle, the really gritty groove, all 16ths, also just feels so right. But beyond Allison, all five of these composers from Xavier Musique and Miyajima, but she goes by Migi, and Lelehua, Lanzelotti, and Sam Wu, all five of them, they didn't write for string quartets. They wrote for Ethel plus Allison. They wrote for five people. And I'm so thrilled at what we came to with these five perfect pieces that speak to such different worlds, like Sam, Terraria, little tiny worlds in Terraria. It's just absolutely amazing. Miggy, she's actually dealing with the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic in real life. Xavier, oh my goodness, waking up in the morning next to your love, and they're next to you on their pillow, and you're next to them on their on your pillow, and those magic moments. And Lelehua dealing with the extraordinary history of Her Majesty Queen Liliuokalani, Hawaii, and her wrongful imprisonment by this nation. I mean, these are four astonishingly powerful concepts that are brought so effectively to the five of us as the five of us with. Kip's incredible jazz chops, Dorothy's amazing ability to just throw down a bass line, like the best rocker you've ever known. Corey's astonishing ability to play anything up high anywhere. Allison is just the most, I'm going to use a tricky term, badass flutist. Oh my God, she's just so intense and good and groovy and cool. And the sweetest sound, and so versatile between the alto to the piccolo and the traditional flute. And then, there's a violist. I just
He's
feel,
stuck around.
yeah, he stuck around 25 years. I just feel like these five composers, they got it. They knew they were writing for this specific quintet of old friends and dear colleagues that hadn't had a chance to do this, to add to, I dare say, the underserved community of flute quintet. There isn't enough besides the Mozart. Yeah, we looked at some, but these are five amazing pieces that deserve to be played, and they were written for us, but when somebody picks them up next, they're going to put their own stamp on it, and I got no problem with that at all. I'm just thrilled that they came from a position of inspiration from this particular quintet.
Thank you.
There are two very, very unique things about, I think, Ethel. One, it's Americanness, in a good way, I think. It's what we've already talked about, which is its passion for contemporary, heartfelt, deeply committed music. This is a combination of those two things, which I find so fascinating, so refreshing, really cool. A collaboration with a native American composer and flautist, musician all around, Robert Mirabal. Taos Pueblo, which, for those who might not know, Southwest USA. What was it like? I mean, you have a tour upcoming with Robert, that's happening October 10th through 14th through Santa Fe, Lakewood, Colorado, Fort Collins, Colorado. Again, anybody, pick up tickets if you're in the area. But what was it? What first led to that relationship is the first thing I'd like to know, because it's a long-standing one between Ethel and Robert. But then, what has kept it growing? What has kept it refreshing? It's what? How many more than 10 years since you first started working with him, and now you're here? I mean, what's that arc like?
Yeah, I think we might be looking like 16 years, something like that. We're all gonna have different opinions about that, but somebody could nail it down. The inspiration came from a project that honestly came from Ethel's very beginnings. When we first started, we were in meetings all the time. We were meeting probably more than we were playing because we were designing a new model of a performing ensemble, a creating ensemble, a producing and presenting ensemble. And we were just getting hopes and dreams out there and figuring out what can we put forward, what can we support. And the thing that came to the fore absolutely from the beginning was collaboration and celebrating our colleagues and building our community. So that started in New York, obviously. But pretty quickly, Mary's looking to her. Mary, so our other founding members are Todd Reynolds Violin and Mary Rowell Violin. We're all looking to our hometowns, our schools, the collaborators we were working with when we were in school. And then this idea of bringing people together, just for playtime, we got this idea of and called Sandbox. Sandbox never really took off, but then after a few years, the idea of it just kept percolating. And Mary came up with the term truck stop. And the idea of truck stop was, yes, still everybody into the sandbox, we're still going to play. But we had been on the road a lot at that point, and we were starting to note that we get off a plane, we play a concert, we might do a youth program that afternoon or something. Go to the hotel, get up early, fly out. Don't really actually experience the community in any way. Don't get to be with fellow artists. We don't get to see what's important to them. We don't get to, we might catch an odd sports event on the telly or something, but we have no real relationship to the community. And it was just fleeting, and we wanted more. So Truck Stop was born. And the idea was, never really turned out this way, but we'd basically show up in your town and sit down at the truck stop and jam with anybody who showed up. And what that has come to now, and we're thrilled that we're reinvigorating the truck stop initiative. Truck stop is now an invitation to presenters and producers and local community arts organizations to invite local artists of any stature, but celebrated folks, people that you cherish in your community, invite them into the sandbox with Ethel. That we can just get together and play and enjoy each other's work, explore each other's worlds, open up that space as that beginner's mind space. That's what Truck Stop was when it came into being in mid-2000s, early mid-aughts, I guess it is. And that was the inspiration that caused us to reach out to Robert, that we were looking for four singular American artists. We were commissioned by Brooklyn Academy of Music to build Truck Stop the Beginning. And so Robert was on our list as a singular American artist whose work was awe-inspiring, jaw-dropping, truly. He was a multi-artist, multi-everything. Father, farmer, tribal elder, composer, poet, flutist, actor, dancer, singer, everything. Robert does everything. And I say first and foremost, tribal elder and father and now grandfather. Robert came to us from Truck Stop. And it was that spirit of, we're going to go and be with you and know nothing. And we invite you to come and do the same. And just explore together with the skill sets that we have, with the ears that we have, especially with the hearts that we have. And we're going to just see what comes. And so Robert contributed to our Truck Stop show at BAM. The other collaborators remain dear friends. Dean Osborne, Bluegrass Royalty from Kentucky, director of the Kentucky School of Bluegrass and Traditional Music. Celebrated Tejano Conjunto, La Reina de Tejano Conjunto, Eva Ibarra, from San Antonio, Texas. Slack key guitar master Jeff Peterson, just an astonishing, gifted and connecting musician. He was truly the glue that brought us all together. And of course, Robert. So Ava, Dean, Robert, and Jeff. And we all built this show. Somehow it came that just things continued to connect with Robert and Ethel. And we found ourselves, just as our relationships grew in different ways with the others, we found that building touring shows with Robert made a lot of sense. And he, in turn, was keen to see what this... Well, just extremely special pairing with a bunch of string-forward multi-instrumentalists and composers felt. We all wrote. We all did other things, keyboards or percussions, and then we brought singing into the mix. And Robert was, he started out poking at us. Anybody meets Robert, he's going to spend first months or years just teasing you and ribbing you to figure out where you all lie. But eventually it all came clear that we are family together, and this quintet that we've built does extend to our larger family. So our families, our personal families, are tight with his family, and we feel welcomed into his Pueblo community as a result of his welcoming heart and the hard work that we all went through to get to know each other and learn to be with each other. The ultimate gift that Robert gave us that continues to inspire to this day and what drives us forward is Robert reinvigorated in all of us, or maybe inspired in all of us, a conversation that we had not even necessarily recognized. In classical Western music of the European tradition, there are certain elements of ceremony or sacred offerings in music. You'll see them oftentimes in, you know, you're playing a requiem or a mass, or you're doing Messiah, or for me, it was often when I'd be playing a memorial service. I always felt that I was most called to my actual purpose to be on the earth when I was playing, you know, an Ave Maria at Uncle Danny's funeral, because that was his favorite piece of all time, and I was able to contribute in that context. We've all had our dabblings in ceremony coming from the European classical tradition. But Robert, I dare say, doesn't do anything in life that is not ceremony. He does not walk an unconsidered footstep. He does not step onto a stage without creating space for ceremony. He does not write, breathe, play, ride a horse, farm the earth, be a grandfather without considering the sacred, and in fact, the secret in so doing. Robert will say that for something to be sacred, it needs to be secret, and for it to be secret, it is in fact sacred. I don't feel that I'm betraying a confidence by sharing this right now. He will say that from the stage. But what we have with him is secret and ours. It's not like we've said words that are secret, but this is ours alone. And I know that audiences can read it. I can feel it. When we greet each other in a traditional way that he has shared with us all, it feels like we're being welcomed back into his world. And welcome back into our world, the five of us, and our extended families. And our families are always welcome. We celebrate births, we mourn deaths, we share milestones with each other. And we've found or refound ceremony.
Thank you.
You mentioned it briefly, the members of Ethel, the Ethels, play, or you play, yes, but you also compose. There's also an aspect yourself, you, the players involved, of creating your own music to play for each other, with each other. Your most recently released album, as of when this will come out, is Vigil, which has some of those works, also a centerpiece work by another composer. I'll let you explain it. You'll speak far better on it than I will. But what's it like to get a piece from Kip and play it, or get a piece from Dorothy or Corey, or to give a piece to those three? You've known each other a long time. You've worked with each other quite a bit. There's obviously a collaborative relationship there. But I always do find there's something a little nerve-wracking about putting that those pieces of paper, or sending that PDF to people. What could I'd just like you to talk about that kind of within the quartet experience a bit.
Oh boy. You're right.
Take your time. Take your time, please.
Well, I think honestly there's a reason Stravinsky employed Robert Craft, right? It's so hard to rehearse your own music. So hard. And it's especially hard when it's with your own group, because you have to function as two different artistic entities. You have to function as the creator of the work, and in a sense, the producer of the work from that chair. Then you have to represent as the performer of the work. And you know, how many times have I, composers out there, how many times have you written a piece of your own, brought it to your own ensemble, and realized, wait a second, I can't play this? It's an amazing thing to just, wait, I wrote this for myself. What was I thinking? Or then realizing, oh my goodness, well, that triplet over the bar line is absolutely not going to work, and I need to change this. And you're thinking about this thing that you've done, and that's way more complex than I would do. But you got to turn off the critic, or turn it on at the right time, while being the kind and loving collaborator that you always intend to be, and not getting down on yourself for whatever, you know, copy edits you've made, or you didn't put in accidentals here that you needed to do. And oh my goodness, the list just goes on and on and on and on. What we can guarantee, which I love, it's just amazing, is that we are always open. Anybody brings something in, great, let's do it. It's so much easier than being the other way. And it's so refreshing to just say, hey, open, yep, let's do it. We've got stuff coming up with Robert, let's do it. You got some stuff, let's try it. We just did a recording of some new Kip stuff for Robert, so that Robert specifically can be learning it. Kip's done a treatment of a traditional shield dance that Robert basically will be doing what Robert's used to doing with the shield dance song, but with this wacky string thing going on all around it. Robert needs to hear it. Work that I'm bringing is just straight up dance music for Robert to dance to, that I'm thinking he's actually just going to get thrown at him when we see him, because Robert can dance in a second, and I'm a little behind on my work. But the big thing is the welcoming, that bring anything and we're going to give it a go. And most likely we're going to find a way to make it work. And this stuff self-selects. If somebody realizes, you know, this isn't necessarily a fit for this thing, with some exceptions, someone may realize, you know, I'm not going to push this one anymore. This doesn't feel like the right fit. I have offered some things to collaborations that I have retracted that. Nope, that's not for us anymore. Kip has done the same. Not necessarily retracted, or just, we're not pushing for that anyway. We've moved in another direction. Also, sometimes you find, have you ever written? I talk about writing for, other composers writing for Ethel. I wrote a piece, I'm not going to say which one, but I wrote a piece, I've written a couple pieces actually, that just weren't for Ethel. They were not for Ethel. I didn't realize it. I'm writing and I'm thinking, this would be so groovy, this would be awesome. And I wrote the wrong piece for my own band, and I had to figure that out. And I've done that more than once. So that's fascinating too, to realizing, wait, this belongs actually in different instrumentation entirely. I wrote a string quartet. This belongs on pianos. What is wrong with me? Stuff like that. But back to Stravinsky and Robert Kraft. I don't claim to be in Stravinsky's head, but if I had a Robert Kraft in my life, I would sure appreciate, excuse me, that he would know my work so well, and that he would be able to work it through with people so that I could just be a composer during that time. That would be the great gift. Don't have such a luxury with the quartet, but we do have the luxury of open hearts, open ears, for people who know that they can count on each other and count on their strengths. We do know how to write for each other, even though, I've made plenty of mistakes, but I know that I can give this thing to Corey and he's gonna nail it. I know that Dorothy's gonna be able to just lock down this thing, and I also know that I can say, Kip, can you just do that thing that you do with the harmonics over there? And Kip's got amazing harmonics. It's ridiculous. And I know that I can count on them. And then because I know them so well, perhaps I can step back a little bit and give myself a break when I need to, because you gotta be nice to yourself in these processes as well.
We started with collaboration. We're going to end with collaboration. And anything to say from you in closing? Anything you want to say? Anything you want to promote?
I just came from a class so I teach at the Longy School of Music of Bard College in Cambridge, Mass. And I just came from a class that I teach called Chamber Music with a Point of View. And we were going through Liz Lerman's critical response theory. And I just want to say, I'm really charged by how smart and how connected young people are today. My students at Longy, I'm biased, they're fabulous. Likewise, our students at Denison. But I had a colleague come in today, Karen Krolock, who's founding artistic director of Monkey House Dance in Boston, and she's just a mighty force, and she's a writer, a textile artist, a choreographer, performer, producer, presenter, member of all sorts of organizations, and she's dealing with a chronic illness that has given her quite a serious disability, and she's generally working with a walker now. This is a choreographer, indomitable spirit, and she came in and just woke up all these young minds to the idea of being with art that isn't, well, it's just totally unexpected. She brought in a piece of crochet. It's the Blanket Project, I think it was called. It was driven by an artist who did not want immigrants to our nation to be met with a wall. She wanted them to be met with a welcoming blanket. So Karen's been contributing to this project for years now. I think it came in 2017. And she brought a blanket that was in process to her students, to our students, my students actually, today. And to see these young people being confronted by these two crazy art folks, this brilliant choreographer, multi-artist, and this violist, saying, "Here, hold this crocheted piece of work, and let's go through the critical response theory. Let's ask questions about this. Let's see if critiques are welcome. Let's make observations about this. Let's have a dialogue with the artist." And to see them just waking up to, I can have opinions about things that aren't music, and I can have conversations around that, and that other things can be, my artistic experience as a musician can be transplanted into another discipline. I could actually take this conversation that I might have about how I feel about your Julia Wolf performance, and I could actually use some of those techniques and actually transplant them to how I feel about the dinner that we just built together. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see young people waking up to that. And I think, not even waking up to that, just realizing it's in their power, it's in their grasp, that the world is not as divided as they may have thought it was. And this very specialized work that we do as we go to our trade schools, is in fact setting us up to be brilliant listeners, brilliant thinkers, brilliant critics, and generally inspired folks who are ready to take on the world. And it's so exciting to me in these interesting times that there are young people coming up in schools who are ready to take it on and realize with just tiny little flick of a switch, all it takes is handing them a blanket for them to realize that they can be thinking about other things. And it doesn't just begin and end with their Brahms or their Beethoven or their Mozart, or their Ethel Smith or their Louis Ferlin. So that's really exciting for me. Yeah, that plus I can't wait to get on stage with Allison next week and then with Robert in October. Gonna be good times.
Fantastic, beautifully said. And thank you again so much for being here, for taking your time. And yeah.
Thank you. Such a pleasure indeed. Great talking with you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music. a nonprofit with a mission to provide equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. If you would like to support Relevant Tones, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/relevanttones. For $5 a month, you can support this great podcast that brings creative music to you every week. For Relevant Tones, I'm Matthew Dosland. Thank you so much for listening.